Yes, Poor Fellow, My Country. It was written by Xavier Herbert in the 1960s, and it won the Miles Franklin Award in 1975, and it's the longest Australian novel ever written, a whopping 1,400 pages. And I feel as though I have to say I'm embarking on a great journey. When I chose the books on the list for the reading club, they were books that I'd either read or wanted to read and thought this would be a great opportunity to read. Now, you know, I didn't know what I was setting us all up for. This book is so enormous that I feel as though I'm just, sort of at the doorstep of something that I feel is quite important. Anyway, let's find out if you think that and what our guest thinks. The story is set in the Northern Territory in the late 1930s, and it traces a custody battle over a young part Aboriginal boy called Prindy. Prindy wants to be initiated as a snake man, that's his totem. And his mum, his black mum Nell, is vehemently against this. His skin grandfather is Bob Wiridiridee, who is known as Cockeyed Bob, and he's an Aboriginal spiritual leader. And he beckons the boy toward the ancient culture. And then you've got Prindy's white grandfather, a bloke called Jeremy De Lacy, who I guess is the sort of prickly voice of tolerance in the book. He takes a stand against the official forces that are controlling the destiny of all of these Aboriginal people. Of course, this is at a time before the Aborigines were counted as citizens by white Australia. And there's a whole cast of other characters. They're white and black. So I'm dying to know what you think. Do jump online and text us 0418 2265 76. That's 0418 2265 76, or of course you can tweet us. Well, to discuss the book, we're joined in the club by storyteller and musician Jan Wozitski. Jan has a keen interest in Australian history and in black and white relations. He spent a lot of time in remote northern Australia. Jan, it's nice to have you with us.
Good morning, Michael.
Welcome back to Studio 306, where I know you've been many, many times. And on the line in Canberra is Dr. Janine Lane. She's a postdoctoral fellow with the Australian Centre for Indigenous History at the Australian National University, and she's a Wiradjuri woman. She's an expert on the representation of Indigenous people in Australian literature. Good morning, Janine.
Good morning.
Completely lovely to have you with us. And also with us in the Melbourne studio is Felix Ma, who's a composer and musician who has read the book seven times, he says. In fact, he wrote a 30,000-word précis for filmmaker Baz Luhrmann as part of Baz's research for his film Australia, which is loosely based on Poor Fellow, My Country. And I've read that précis. That's been a bit of a help in getting my mind around what's going on here. Let's talk about where we all first were when we read the book. Felix, you've read it seven times. You probably can't remember the first time.
Yeah, that's correct. I can't. And good morning. I forgot to say that. It was in the early 1980s, and I was studying folk music at Melbourne University. And I came across this book, which was just a marvellous reference of music history, particularly white music history. And I made a big index of it, and I thought I might even write a thesis about it. And I was born in the Northern Territory, and I went back there, and I met Xavier Herbert, and I just wanted to check out if those references were true.
And mean if the details of this story are true?
Yeah.
Whether he was writing out of his own experience?
Yeah, he was. And he, you know, just the few questions I asked, he knew them. He could sing the songs. He knew them backwards, you know. In some cases, he'd been the performer behind the character in the song.
Well, let's talk a bit more about who he was a bit later on. What about you, Janine? You're very familiar with Herbert's other great work, Capricornia. When did you first encounter this one, Poor Fellow, My Country?
Yeah, it was in the early 80s as well. And I was studying Australian literature at UNE in Armidale. And, Capricornia was actually the work that was on the syllabus, but, you know, because of that then I read Poor Fellow, My Country over the summer holidays.
And UNE, we should explain, is the University of New England.
Yes, that's correct.
So am I getting from that you were impressed by Capricornia and you thought, gosh, this bloke's written more? Is that why you went in search of his other big work?
Capricornia was many things. It was, in many ways, it was very confronting. You know, I mean, parts of it were actually wonderful, you know, really ironic. But other things were a little disconcerting in terms of what Herbert was really saying about. I know he was doing something really brave, like he was grappling with what he thought was national conscious. Well, was his consciousness of the nation. But, yeah, so I just read on to see what else he had to say.
But as an Aboriginal reader, you were finding some things he had to say problematic.
Some of the representations, like on the one hand, there is his argument, which is, you know, settler Australia coming to terms with Aboriginal presence and otherwise both races who live here are, you know, are fated. But on the other hand, the whole thing is so fatalistic his representations of Aboriginal people are in some ways very, very binary to the settlers.
All right, let's unpack that as we go, because these are interesting and challenging ideas. Jan, when did you first read it?
1987. I was at Borroloola in the Gulf of Carton Terrier. I was on the trail of W.E. Bilharney, researching his life, who finishes up in the book, as I discovered.
Yeah. We're going to talk a bit about Bilharney as we unfold, so perhaps you should just tell us who Bilharney was.
Bilharney was, well, he was many things. He lived from 1895 to 1962. His last job was as the first ranger at Uluru when it was made a national park in 1957. Before that, he was a patrol officer in the Natives Affairs branch. He was a beachcomber. He was the author of 12 books about the Northern Territory. He was the darling of ABC radio in the 40s when John Thompson, the great documentary maker, he made at least seven or eight documentaries with Bilharney. So I was researching this life. I was fairly confused about all of the complexities of black-white relations that I was entering and the laws. And we were camped by the river at Borroloola. There was a mob of us for 3 or 4 weeks at this stage. Yeah. And I picked this up. I tried to read it 4 times, but I picked it up there. And it all unfolded.
So you've been, I mean, all your life, really, you've been one of those white Australians who's gone in search of an understanding of Aboriginal Australia from, you know, and how white men and white women and everyone can get on, and black people.
Not all my life, but my parents introduced me to Pastor Doug Nichols and took me to Jackson's Track. So from a very, very early age, I had this bang that there's something going on here in Australia.
All right. So we've got a sense of where we're all coming from, I think. So I suppose the way to go into this book is with Prindy. I don't know where to jump in, really, but let's start with Prindy. So who's he? Do you want to start with that, Janine? Can you talk a little bit about who you think Prindy is?
Yes. I'm interested in the whole custody battle scenario because definitely that's what it is. But
Let's just explain what the story is for the people who haven't read it. So who is he?
Yes, okay. Prindy is a young Aboriginal boy who has a white father and an Aboriginal mother. And he is the protagonist in the, there's a lot of characters, but Prindy is really central to the story. and it's interesting that representation of the Aboriginal children of mixed race is, or as they said at the time, the half-caste problem. Herbert is really, really preoccupied with that, and it doesn't really resolve itself in Prindy, and he's so many things to so many people, but
I hesitate to use the word stolen generation because it's so much a term of our time, and it's not a term that's being used in the book, but it is the historical moment when that phenomenon we now call the historical moment is very, very evident, isn't it?
Yes, very evident in retrospect, very much so.
Do you want to add to this, Felix? Let's help build this character.
I think the story is greatly about him, and it's about him wanting to be initiated. And it's about the frustrations of so many characters, including good characters and villains who stop him from being that. And I think that's the thrust of the main story. And I think we need to keep in mind that while it does comment grandiosely, about this world, it's a work of fiction. About a boy who wants to be initiated and all the things that go into stopping him. And it becomes a metaphor for the book about the white people. He says the same thing happens to the white people. They have lost their soul in a similar way to Prindy, because Prindy never does actually get to his goal. And I think Xavier Herbert saying, well, until we take all these things into consideration, until we grow this tolerance, until we grow this understanding, until we grow this soul, we won't be the true nation. Mm. We won't be the Commonwealth, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there is, whatever else you think about the book, a bigness of spirit and the bigness of ambition in what he's doing, is there not?
Yeah, there is, yeah.
And do you see it as a depressing book in the end, because Prindy is seen as the kind of, well, he calls him the golden child. He's a child who holds hope for the future.
Well, I suppose I don't find it personally so. I find it just an amazing story. I think there is a grain of truth in it. I think, at certain times and in certain ways, the Australian nation hasn't gathered the soul that perhaps was promised to it by itself. And that's why, I suppose we all have a personal opinion here, Do we reach that, have we reached that soul? And that's what the author is asking us. What is your tradition? What is your background? Are you true to that background? Have you recognised that? And are you true to that? And I think that's what he's asking all of us as readers. And, he uses Prindy as the example.
There is a philosophical earnestness about the book, which is what we're talking about. But you wouldn't want to lose sight of the fact that it's also this enormous sprawling exercise in storytelling. I mean, every page you turn, there's a new character coming on. There's great colour. There's great movement. Enormous amounts of energy.
It reminded me of Dickens in that way too, with those very, very long sentences and these characters that are glorious and grubby and right down to the marrow. All the way through the book, the characters that come in and out. What happened for me was that I sort of recognised them all around me in Borroloola. When I was there, it was like suddenly this book explained what I was living with.
The
characters in the book, they suddenly explained all of these people that I was cohorting with in Borroloola, black and white. And I found the book so valuable. And we had a kid who used to be at our camp all of the time. And to me, he was Prindy. He was just like I said to one of the others, he's just like Prindy, isn't he? His father it was that didn't want him initiated. Mm. And that was a battle going on at the time. So Prindy does represent those things Felix was talking about. And I do also feel this, that maybe Australia has missed the opportunity to have real depth in this land. The two or three things I noted reading it again, what Jeremy DeLacy is saying about loving the land, unless you can come to love it, you come to hate it. And I also had around me, living at Borroloola, white people who I thought hated the place.
Mm.
And we were there trying to understand it in a way that Aboriginal people do, albeit that we were white fellows.
Yeah, yeah. This is Books and Arts Daily. This is Books and Arts Daily on RN with Michael Cathcart, and we're talking about Poor Fellow, My Country by Xavier Herbert, because it's Australian Classics Book Club time. Jan Wozitski is with us. He's a storyteller. Felix Ma is a musician who's read the book 7 times, obsessed by it, he is. And Dr. Janine Lane is an Indigenous scholar. Janine, before we get into those problematic areas we were talking about, can you talk a bit about the storytelling qualities? As a lover of literature yourself, do you respond to this great narrative drive that's unfolding around us?
Oh, yeah. Look, it's a wonderful, epic kind of story, and the characters are so colourful. He draws wonderful characters, and you do know a lot of them. And there's so many stories within stories, and I can really relate to that.
I can feel him writing in a kind of fury almost. I feel as though this is a book that, I mean, he has such a facility with language that you feel in a funny way it must have come to him in a kind of rage, in a kind of rush, in a sort of torrent. Do you feel that?
Yeah, and he was probably really rushing. I mean, I believe he heard a lot of this stuff. His dialogue is so real and vivid. He was probably writing it in a great fury of memory and, to get it all down.
Mm. Mm. Do text us and tell us what you think. We're waiting for text on 0418 22 65 76. 0418 22 65 76. One listener says, Prindy's quest for manhood is a symbol of Australia's failure to grow up and become a nation of its own. We're still Waiting, and that's.
Oh, I think I think the author would go hear, hear. You know, I think he'd go, yes, you've read my book and you understand.
So Prindy stands for all of us. He's neither Aboriginal nor white.
He obviously is. He's an Aboriginal boy, but that's what the author wants us to make the, you know, to carry from the book. Yes, absolutely.
He's got a great musical gift too, hasn't he? The boy Prindy has a musical gift. It opens.
Boy genius.
Boy genius.
Mozart almost.
Yeah.
And making up his own songs and learning the flute. Yeah. He's a musician.
He's got that little gift for it, yeah. Now, there's a link with the title with Poor Bugger Me, the song by Ted Egan that's so well known. Do you want to just talk briefly about that? Because you're going to sing it for us.
Yes. It's called the Gurindji Blues, the main line in it being Poor Bugger Me. This poor fella me, poor bugger me, is something you hear Aboriginal people in the top end say quite a bit. Ted wrote the song in 1967 when the Gurindji were at the beginning of their fight to get their land back and get their get Lord Vestey off their land and
so
acquire
Lord Vestey
it themselves.
Lord Vestey is the owner of the great cattle runs in...
Lord Vestey is the owner of the cattle runs, and he's Vasey in the book.
Yeah.
And they were asking for their land back, and it went to Cabinet, and the Minister for the Interior, Peter Nixon, who was the country, now National Party member for Gippsland, said that if the Gurindji want their own land back, why don't they buy it back off Lord Vestey? And Ted was inspired to write this song, The Gurindji Blues. For writing it, Ted told me that he was threatened with the sack.
From?
From someone in the department.
Oh, so
Ted was working for the Department of Aboriginal Affairs in Canberra.
Oh, I see.
At the time.
Now, this would have upset people then. So you've got some rhythm sticks there, clap sticks.
A couple of clap sticks. And Ted's written it in Creole language. Okay. And the cast of characters are Lord Vestey. There's Frank Hardy, the novelist, who goes to Gurindji country to help them when the strike begins. There's ABSCOL, which was a student organisation that was wanting to give people Aboriginal scholarships. Peter Nixon, and I think that's all of the characters in this song, The Gurindji Blues. Pa bugger me, Gurindji, me been set down this country long a time before the Lord Vestey. All the bad land belonged to we, oh, poor bugger me, Gurindji. Poor bugger black fella this country, long time work, no wages we. Work for the good old Lord Vestey, little bit plough with sugar and tea. From Lord Vestey to Gurindji, poor bugger me, Gurindji. Poor bugger me, Gurindji, we bus Vincent Lingayari, talk long all about Gurindji, dag a dag a place for we, home for we, Gurindji. But poor bugger black fella this country, government boss him talk long way, build you house with electricity, but at Wayfill for can't you see, what a creek belong Lord Vestey, oh poor bugger me, Gurindji. Poor bugger me, Gurindji, up come Mr. Prankardy, have scold too and talk along we, give it hand long Gurindji, build him house and plant him tree, long Waddy Creek for Gurindji. But poor bugger black fella this country, government boss him talk long we, can't give it land long black fella see, only spoil him Gurindji, poor bugger me, Gurindji. Poor bugger me, Gurindji, Peter Nixon talk long way, buy your own land, Gurindji, buy him back from Lord Vestey, oh, poor bugger me, Gurindji. But poor bugger black fella this country, suppose we buy him back country, what do you reckon proper fee? Might be plough at sugar and tea from Gurindji to Lord Vestey, poor bugger me, Gurindji.
Jan Wozitski there singing Poor Bugger Me. This is Books and Arts Daily on RM with Michael Cathcart. It's book club time and we're talking about Poor Fellow My Country by Xavier Herbert. So there's a link there with the title, Poor Bugger Me, Poor Fellow My Country. Now we've got a little a grab here too of another man singing, which is Bill Haney. You were talking about Bill Haney earlier on.
And Bill Haney also finds his way into a character in the book as Billy Brew, Donkey Team Man. Half of Billy Brew is this fellow W.E. Bill Haney.
Right, so Bill Haney is here talking with, it's with Alan Marshall. I don't think we hear Alan Marshall in the little grab we've got. But let's hear what Alan Marshall's got, Bill Haney's got to say, because it's about, well, the subject of music, actually.
This is a tale, the one of a native girl who was with a Chinese. He's dead now up there, and how he gave a tucker, and it tells her the lament of what happened to her. And I'll only give a few verses, but it goes like this. Popola me, Jimmy Panqui, Jimmy Panqui, popola me. Popola me, popola me, popola me. Then the bass comes in. Beggar Panqui, beggar Panqui, beggar Panqui, beggar Panqui. Popola me, popola me, Jimmy Panqui, Jimmy Panqui. Him give it me sugar, him give it me tea. Popola me, popola me, popola me, popola me, beggar Panqui.
There he goes, Bill Haney there. Great to hear that old voice.
That was on an LP.
Was it indeed?
Talk about where Bill Haney and Alan Marshall are having a virtual storytelling competition. Dare one take a breath and the other one gets in. But when Bill Haney gets to talk about this sort of stuff, Alan Marshall just sits right back and says, go on, Bill, tell me.
Dr. Janine Lane, I wonder how you feel about all this. You've got these white fellas, Xavier Herbert, Jan Wozitski, Ted Egan, all trying to get in the rhythm of Aboriginal language, Aboriginal speaking. Does this seem like an intrusion, or does it seem, what does it feel to you?
That's an interesting question. I guess not intrusion, but it's interesting where white fellas, as you say, take an interest in Aboriginal culture, and a lot of it is around music or storytelling, which is Herbert's stuff really plays up on the exotic and the mystique. I don't know. I'm just kind of fascinated.
No, I can hear you wrestling with these questions, and I'm not trying to lead you anywhere, Janine. I'm just interested in, because the other way to look at it is to say, look, there are white blokes who are trying to understand what blackfellas are all about, and until that happens, we're not all going to go forward.
I could just jump in there, because in the book itself, Jeremy, who's sort of the white hero in some sense, in the author's voice, well, he ends up being speared and killed.
Yes, he does.
For interfering in the business. And so he becomes a villain sort of towards the end, although he's very well-intentioned.
He is, and that's what kind of a very pessimistic kind of reading for me. Like, to me, I read the whole book as, it's a very, very important site for reading The Nation at the time and still has much to say, but I read it as the great Australian anxiety, you know, the angst of the author. Comes through to me.
Angst about what?
The angst about the state of the nation, about identity. He has these real concerns about Aboriginal people. He really does have that.
And concerns, that Janine, that other white people don't see it.
No, that's right, that other white people don't see it, and he's so tremendously frustrated, and that's the angst I'm talking about. You know, it really is like a great, the great Australian anxiety.
And it comes through so strongly, doesn't it?
Yeah. To me, it really does, but also so does the fatalism, and there's that element to the book that people like Jeremy, who is very much the compassionate person. But there's just elements that are so much beyond their control. It's almost at some points it doesn't even matter what they do. Mm. You know, there's just so many things beyond the...
So what does that mean to us now, do you think, Janine?
the things that are beyond, you know, that pessimistic, that fatalistic element, you mean? Or
yeah, I do.
I still think it's made it... Well, look, it's, you know, people are obviously talking about it. It's caused people to question themselves. But I guess if I'm trying to think how I would read the book from another cultural perspective, you know, like if I wasn't reading it from an Aboriginal perspective, if I was reading it from a settler perspective.
But you don't need to think that. I mean,
I am trying to think, because you said, what does that say to us? And I'm trying to think, like, yeah, I just... There's some representations there of Aboriginal people that if I was looking at it differently, I'd still kind of get hit with this classic otherness, this binary.
Oh, the otherness is clear, yes. Yvonne sent us a text. She says, the best book I've read. It so captures the truth and the mindset of that Australia. Like your guest, I have the works of Bill Harney, and these two men should be compulsory reading. I mean, one of the aspects of...
Here.
One of those... aspects that's really quite shocking in the book is the treatment of Aboriginal women, both by Aboriginal men and by white men. I mean, we see Aboriginal women being quite casually raped. I mean, there's a scene where an Aboriginal girl is just taken into a tent. The bloke says, take your dress off, and he rapes her, and then that's it, and she goes away.
Is this Nobby Knoll? Are we talking about the Knolls scene here? Do you know?
Look, I can't remember. I'm so lost in the kind of vastness of this. I'm struggling to kind of get to terms with what this is.
But there are rapes in this sacred business. And at the start of the book as well. So I think they're to be separated, you know, from the white rapes, because they're talking about completely different things.
Okay. What do you make of that, Janine? Because that's very confronting for any reader.
Yeah, that's very confronting. And, you know, there is, people say, yes, it's fiction, but representations are very important. They're more than just symbols. They're ways that people come to know the subjects they're reading about.
Some people in white Australia think of Aboriginal culture as a sort of new age love fest. It is a more robust and sometimes, you know, to modernise but black and white cruel culture, isn't it?
Well, it's certainly confronting.
Confronting,
culture.
Okay, confronting. Let's
I mean, and I like, think, you know, as a modern day parent, we go through a little bit of this with our sons and our kids and our daughters. But, you know, to have one of my kids go through the ordeal that Prindy wants to go through and has to go through, that's confronting. That's incredibly confronting.
The initiation rites that he has to go through.
Incredibly confronting. And we're talking about things that I don't know if we could tolerate ourselves now.
Exactly. And that sets up a whole lot of otherness there too. And also, I'm just, you know, I know he's an author, takes, you know, perhaps he can take creative license with some of this stuff, but I wonder what he is trying to say to his reader in being so explicit about that violence to women. And
Janine, are you saying that because you think it's inappropriate of him to say these things, that they're private matters, or are you saying that because you think he's misrepresenting something?
I'm saying that I'm wondering why he lived in the area. I can't say what he did or didn't witness. That's sort of less. What's really important to me is why he feels he needs to make them so explicit to a public readership. What is he trying to say about Aboriginal people?
I think it's worth taking into account that he was writing this in the 60s. Today, writers wouldn't dare put these things in a book for several reasons, one of them being that you're providing ammunition for the anti-Aboriginal lobby.
Hmm. Yes, that's true. But, I don't know about today. I mean, you know, there was a controversy about another book written much more recently which portrayed, and it was in an urban or semi-urban setting, which portrayed the death of a young Aboriginal man. It was written by a white guy, and that was considered very inappropriate by the community, the representation of that death, even though he fictionalised it. Once again, you know, I'm wondering what... that's kind of those issues are kind of sensitive and
If I could just jump in there, I think at least we can say he's very consistent. You know, he's very explicit about just about everything.
He is.
Yeah.
You know, so he's not being, you know, there's no special treatment there. He's
tough on everybody.
He's telling it exactly how he sees it and the way he thinks it is.
Let's talk more about who he... This is Books Nuts Daily on RN, and we're talking about Poor Fellow, My Country, which is by Xavier Herbert, and my guests are Janine Lane, who's an Indigenous scholar. She's in our Canberra studios. In the Melbourne studios are Felix Ma, who's read the book many, many times, and Jan Wozitski, who's a storyteller and knows the book well. And you're listening as well. We've had a text message. I agree that the book is like Dickens and presents a strong social critique through vivid storytelling. Herbert paints a picture of a society in chaos and tries to understand rather than judge the individuals. And she says, please don't tell them that Baz Luhrmann's film is this book. 1% of that movie, Australia, is Poor Fellow, My Country. We'll come to the movie in just a tick if we've got time.
I wish to disagree.
You wish to disagree more than that. Let's talk about the length. No, let's talk about Xavier Herbert himself.
Yeah.
Who was he?
Well, I've read his autobiography and I read the biography, and he is a very confusing man, and it'd take a long time to tell the story, and he's a very contradictory man, and he's very often not a very likable man.
But what was he doing up there that meant he was in a position to write this story?
Well, I think, you know, he was a writer. He was a writer to his fingertips, and he just really struggled to tell these stories.
But he was working.
He was in the Knackaroos?
Oh, at times. He did all sorts of part-time jobs. He was a pharmacist. He was a
North Australian Observer unit in the bush with others to be behind the lines if the Japanese came, with Aboriginal people. Of course, they couldn't survive bush without them.
Mm-hmm.
He was a miner. He was all sorts of things. But, you know, I just think we have to judge him. You know, he's just a mass of contradictions. But I just think we have to judge him on his best work, and that is Capricornia and most of Poor Fellow, My Country.
Yeah. Is Poor Fellow, My Country too long?
Look, I think it is, and there's a great debate here. And, you know, in 1962 he went to the Adelaide Arts Festival and said, no one edited Capricornia but myself. And I think it's the big issue, because I think with Inky Stevenson he's moulded Capricornia into a great work and an approachable work, whereas with Poor Fellow, My Country we get warts and all, and it's a massive, grandiose work. But I wonder if he had gone through the same process, would we not get a work that spoke to more people?
You know, funny enough, as I was reading it, I was thinking, I wonder if I could take on the task of abridging this.
Mm.
I mean, you'd have to give up 2 years of your life to do it.
Well, it's a task I ended up...
It could be a great thing to do.
I ended up doing, because...
But you precede it.
Yeah, I precede it, yeah.
But I mean actually producing a full-on abridgment that was the sort of essence of the book, but in half the size.
Oh, I wouldn't try to do that.
I think that'd be too hard.
Too hard, just too hard.
Oh, well, what would you leave out? You know, I mean, I've talked about things that were, problematic, but, you know, that would be very hard.
I think from a quality point of view, I think there's a general downhill slope in quality from about page 7 or 8, you know. He just can't keep the quality going. Mm-hmm. And that's a real shame, because some of the big ideas are in the second half of the book, and they don't get the great quality of writing that he manages in the first half of the book. So it's a real shame that he can't judge his best work with his great ideas, you know.
Mm. One of the contradictions which we could briefly talk about is his attitude to women. I mean, we talked about his attitude to Aborigines, but what about his attitude to women? Frances de Groen wrote a biography of Xavier Herbert, and she has lots to say about Herbert's hatred of the feminine. What do you think about
that? Well, you know, it's confusing, but certainly in those rape scenes, and some of his female characters are very confronting to a modern point of view. I think that's all we can say. They're just incredibly confronting. But, you know, he does have an old world view of some women, you know.
Mm. Now, the film, I suppose, is a kind of abridgment, and you worked on the film. What was your role in the film?
I worked on the additional music, which ended up being a massive job.
Yeah.
But, you know, what essentially happened was I was asked to provide a pressay, and Baz got back to me and says, yes, it's accurate, but I want a love story as well. I want a Hollywood love story as well. But I think, you know, the real, what the best work in the film is the work between King George and the boy. And I think it's, and I think in that sense, it's, it is true to the book in that sense, is that that's the story that really gets you in.
And that's, and they correspond to Prindy and Cockeyed Bob.
Yeah, yeah. And so he's taken those stories and some of those characters and worked a matinee film, you know.
Yeah. I mean, that shocking scene where the Aboriginal woman dies in that tank of water, yeah, and life just goes on.
Well, perhaps we should get Janine to speak about this, because it's almost a scene from Capricornia there.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, yeah, I felt that very much so, and that was a very, very tragic scene, and a lot of Herbert's work is very intertextual. Francis de Groin noted that as well. It sort of parodies dovetails into other things, and that scene where the woman dies in the tank in Australia quite early is like the ending for another woman and a baby in a tank in Capricornia. So I mean, it was a very tragic scene, and he does tragedy very well.
As we're winding up, let's just talk about where the book leaves us. Where does it leave you? I mean, what's the question? The question is, does the conclusions it draws about Australia, whatever they are, still apply to Australia today?
I think the questions do. Mm. I think the questions do.
Okay, so what are the key questions?
So the key question is, how do we bring up our young people? How do we become Australians? What sensitivities do we need to have? And they may not be his, but, you know, what is the education that we need? You know, what do we need to feel for our environment? These are the sort of things that as young people we need to bring our young people on, and who are expert in these
And when you say
questions.
We, do you mean white Australia, or do you mean the lot of us?
All of us, yeah. Mm.
A sense of loss, I think, in the sense that we've blundered into this place, white fellas. And is it with the drowning at the end, where Rivka at the end is going into the water, but she thinks she sees in the bubbles the eyes of Prindy. And that sense of loss that in the end of that book that I found I experienced when Paul Keating didn't get another chance, another term to push the whole issue forward before John Howard came in, and a sense of, have we gone far too far as a nation into what we are now, for anybody to go back? You know, yesterday I did something in a school linking Whitlam's Handful of Earth with the Handful of Earth that was handed to Batman, and I found that half the teachers in the school didn't know about Whitlam's Handful of Sand.
To the Gringy.
And I was I was astonished that in my naivety, thinking everybody ought to know about that. So for me, it's that sense of, can we get back there?
Janine Lane, you've made it very clear what your reservations are. Does the book still pose questions that are relevant to modern Australia?
Yeah, very important questions. Yes, I agree. And just because time has moved on, you know, mentioning the Keating government doesn't mean things have got better, actually. I think, you know, the moving of time, linear time, can actually mean attitudes become regressive. And I think the book still asks some very important questions, and the anxiety is still very relevant today.
So if we were going to embark on this journey, should we read this one or will we read Capricornia? What's our advice to readers? What do you think?
I would certainly start with Capricornia.
I'd start with Capricornia.
I went back to Capricornia after reading this and found it too lightweight. And had to come back to it again some years later.
What a massive mind you must have to find Capricornia too lightweight.
Well, this is heavy, both in weight, but also
in every sense.
When I got into Capricornia, though, and read that, it was beautiful and absolutely stunning.
What about the film? What about Australia?
I thought it was a good Saturday arvo with the flicks.
Hmm.
I didn't think it was the nation-defining thing that the promos gave me the impression it was going to be. As a good, you know, popcorn afternoon, I thought it was great.
Yeah.
I worked on it and I loved it. Well, congratulations to Baz and his team.
Shush, we know you worked on it. Janine?
I thought some parts of the film were great and some and very moving, like we mentioned that the tragic scene. Some parts of it for me were a bit long, a bit drawn out, speaking of editing. But, I enjoyed some scenes in the film.
I still love that moment when the little boy's standing there at the canyon and all those cattle are stampeding towards him.
Yeah. I particularly like the Somewhere Over the Rainbow, the Wizard of Oz story and the little boy.
That's a lovely positive note to end on. Thank you all for coming. It has been a wonderful and rich discussion. I really do appreciate it.
Thanks, Michael.
It's been lovely to have you all here. Dr. Jean Lane has been with us. He's an Indigenous scholar. Felix Ma is a musician who worked on the movie Australia and has read the book many times. And Jan Wozinski is a storyteller and muso who knows the book well. Thank you to all of you. And thank to those of you who texted us. This is Books and Arts Daily on RN with Michael Cathcart.